Hi, everybody. This is Hub Arkush. Wayne Larrabee is out on assignment this week, but I'm joined by Eric Edholm as we bring you this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly, where every week we do our best to bring you all the news, notes, and analysis that matter from around the National Football League.
We'll take a look at all the fascinating moves in free agency, plus a couple of controversial rule changes, and a look at the draft.
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air!
Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us again this week for Pro Football Weekly on the radio. I am Hub Arkush, the publisher and editor at PFW. Our host, Wayne Larrabee, is out on assignment with March Madness going wild right now. Wayne will be back with us in 2 weeks. Filling in for him is Pro Football Weekly senior editor Eric Edholm here in studio. And joining us for the first couple segments on the PFW hotline from the Pro Football Weekly editorial offices is associate editor Arthur Arkush. And, gentlemen, busy, busy week around the NFL. The signings have slowed down, but the big ones are still coming. And it's as much the releases and the cuts that are making news as it is the signings. And we have to start with the huge news out of Chicago late this week, actually Wednesday night of this week, that Brian Urlacher and the Chicago Bears have decided to part ways. And as much as the Bears organization, Eric, is trying to put a good face on it, Urlacher has made it clear while he's not bitter and he doesn't want to throw stones or fight with anybody, there's nothing good about it from his perspective.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, he called it an insult, an ultimatum. You know, he said it wasn't an offer. I mean, the Bears basically offered him a 1 year, $1 million deal with a max value of $2 million. Before the start of free agency, I was totally wrong on this. I thought it would be somewhere in the $3 to $4 million range. He would come back for another year, but I guess they're saying this is the transition. New coach, GM's only been on the job a year. You know, they can make a clean break now and go in a different direction.
Arthur, I think the problem with this from the perspective of a lot of people, quite frankly, both inside the league and friends and media, is that the Chicago Bears have spent the last 2 months crowing about their great respect for Brian Urlacher and how much they would like to have him back if they could work it out. As Urlacher has told the story late this week, the Bears made no attempt to work it out, and he would have preferred it if they just told him to go away.
Yeah, that's right. And, I think it's unfortunate because while you maybe feel bad for Urlacher, I don't know if anyone's going to shed too many tears. The guy's made a lot of money in his career, but you have to separate the two sides. Obviously, Emery and Mark Trestman and everyone else was able to say, you know, we're not letting sentiment get involved. And at the same time, to sort of give him an ultimatum and not have any flexibility to go back and forth, not to mention the mess they have on their hands now trying to replace at least two starters on defense at the second level, is really going to be interesting to see how they're going to go about it. And we'll see if they end up regretting this decision.
You know, and Eric, I think the key for the Chicago Bears, much like analyzing players in the draft, you've got Phil Emery starting his second full season as a GM in the NFL. Mark Trestman's been on the job a month or two. You've got to give these guys the benefit of the doubt that there is a plan. But I think it's reached the point now where people are starting to say, what exactly is that plan? In addition to the Urlacher move, which is exceptionally high profile, Israel Adonijé has been one of the more productive players and one of the better guys in that locker room on that club. Apparently, they don't want him back, but they bring in Turk McBride, a journeyman that Emery had in Kansas City. And there doesn't appear to be any way you can sell that as an upgrade. And so people are now starting to ask the question, is there really a plan here and what is it?
Just going back to Urlacher for 1 second, especially when, you know, the team chairman says he wants him back. The coaches apparently were in favor of bringing him back. So I don't know if there's a disconnect, but I think there is certainly maybe two minds of thought here and two paths that maybe could be taken towards rebuilding this team. And I don't even know if it's rebuilding. It's just reloading, transitional, whatever you want to call it. You make a great point at Adonijé. I think he's one of the league's most underrated players, underappreciated players. You know, maybe there are still some late free agent moves that, at a bargain, could be an upgrade at certain spots. So we still have to see the whole picture and how it all comes together.
Well, they're obviously going to sign some people because they're without four starters on defense.
Correct.
Right now. Nick Roach, their strong side backer, is gone. Kelvin Hayden, their nickelback, is gone. This is why I say you have to assume there's a plan. Just a lot of people are starting to question what it is. And, you know, Arthur, this may dovetail into an even bigger story around the National Football League that I think you're going to hear a lot about in the coming weeks. There was fear in 06 when the CBA was done that it would eliminate the middle class from the National Football League. Football League, and some of that started to happen, but it didn't really take off in earnest. Now you've got to deal with this agreement where there are players like John Abraham, like Dwight Freeney, Carlos Dansby, Charles Woodson. Woodson and Urlacher are future Hall of Famers. These aren't guys that, you know, are just street guys, and they're all without teams right now, and apparently none are getting offered more than a year at the minimum with some incentives.
It's fairly unprecedented. I mean, you're talking about, you said it, a couple Hall of Famers. We have to mention that it's hard to know with these guys. You know, Urlacher was never healthy last year. Charles Woodson hardly healthy last year, so we don't know what these guys have left in the tank. But what we do know is that there's some pretty disgruntled, pretty high-name players as well as agents out there. And like you said, you didn't really see the mad spending spree beyond the Mike Wallaces and, you know, maybe what the Dolphins and the Titans and a few other teams were doing last week when free agency opened. And I think this absolutely has to have a, you know, a direct effect to the latest CBA, and it'll be interesting to see where things go from here.
You know, Eric, Abraham apparently has an offer from the New England Patriots. That's what we've been told. And we know Charles Woodson, the 49ers, would like to have him, but Woodson is used the word disrespected, not by the 49ers so much as by the system. And again, you look at the NFLPA, you look at what happened in 2011, what was accomplished, and where are they now, as their executive director is more interested in looking into how an agent screwed up a contract in Denver.
Yeah, I mean, there are some unhappy people. I can tell you I've gotten a lot of calls from agents. And, of course, if they're not getting the money, they're going to be unhappy. But they feel like this market is something that's going to be representative of the next 2 or 3 years. You know, this is how it's going to be, and it's going to be a flat cap. There's not going to be more money coming into the market. Players aren't going to be paid their market value. Wes Welker's a good example of that. There's so many examples this year. Cliff Avril, the best pass rusher in the draft, getting a two-year, I mean, in the free agent class, getting a two-year deal. I mean, it just shows you that the players got taken to the cleaners a little bit.
You know, it's interesting that the entire agreement that the players signed was based on the premise they could give back some in percentage because revenue was going to go up so high that a little smaller piece of a much bigger pie was
right.
Better than holding the line. The salary cap is now set at $123 million for 2013. That is a $3 million increase over 2011. The cap is not moving at all, and that's where the great miscalculation was made by the players in this whole thing. Guys, I'm going to ask you to hold on for just a minute. Got to take a quick commercial break, but lots more news, a lot of free agency news around the NFL. We're back to talk Rams and Dolphins. I think you know what's coming with that one. Welcome back, everybody, and thank you so much for joining us on Pro Football Weekly. Again, our regular host, Wayne Larrabee, very involved in March Madness. Wayne calls basketball games for Dial Global Radio, and we'll be calling the tournament this week and next. He'll be back with us in 2 weeks. In the interim, our senior editor from Pro Football Weekly, Eric Edholm, is sitting in studio. We're joined by associate editor Arthur Arkish on the PFW hotline from the Pro Football Weekly offices. And, guys, very few teams have been more active in free agency than the Miami Dolphins. I mean, you look at what they did, and they go out and they sign Rams wide receiver Brandon Gibson. They've got Dustin Keller. The big move was Mike Wallace. They've signed a couple linebackers in Philip Wheeler and Danelle Ellerby, which is a huge signing. But then you turn around, you look at the departures. And first it was Reggie Bush and Carlos Dansby and Kevin Burnett and Anthony Fasano. And now, late this week, the St. Louis Rams signed Jake Long. And you know, Eric, for all the money the Dolphins have spent, you look at those basically trades they've made, and you got to ask yourself, are they a better football team?
Right, and now they're picking between what's left over in the free agent market, which is mostly right tackles. So that means probably at this point, Jonathan Martin, their second rounder from last year, who I thought was the weak link on their line at right tackle, switches over to left tackle, because unless they find somebody in the draft at that position, and it looks like most of the big guys will be gone by their 12th pick, I don't know who's going to be their left tackle other than Martin. So I look at these, and I don't think they've gained that much. I think Wallace, frankly, is overrated. I think Ellerby's great when he's a complimentary piece. Wheeler's fine, but I don't think he's a difference maker. And you lose Reggie Bush, a playmaker. So to me, they haven't gotten that much better in the AFC East.
You know, Arthur, I think the key here, and this is an extension of what we were talking about with some of these older veterans who aren't getting any action, Mike Wallace got almost twice as much money as Jake Long. I mean, how does that make sense? Mike Wallace got $30 million guaranteed. Jake Long's total deal in St. Louis is $36 million over 4 years. Wallace gets $30 million guaranteed, $60 million total over 5 years. something is out of whack here.
I was pretty vocal on the radio show last week with my feelings on what the Dolphins have done, and clearly I do agree that something's out of whack. What's going to be interesting, you mentioned the Rams side, obviously Jake Long going there. We know about the history last year where Jeff Ireland and Stephen Ross were made to look a little bit silly by the Rams with Jeff Fisher sort of turning the other cheek and going over to St. Louis. And now Jake Long, I guess there wasn't a ton of interest from Miami, but gosh, I just have to kind of piggyback off what Eric said. I saw Jonathan Martin play enough last year as a rookie to know that he is not ready to protect Ryan Tannehill's blindside. So you help him out, you get him the deep threat, but if you're going to, you know, do it at sacrificing his protection, I just don't know if I agree with what they're doing there.
All right, now, Eric, let's take this a step further. He wasn't a first-year head coach. No new head coach in the NFL was more successful last year than Jeff Fisher in St. Louis. Of course, he's one of the great coaches in the league. Look at what he's done now. Now, they've let some people go. They've let some veterans get away. A couple wide receivers, interestingly enough, both Brandon Gibson and Danny Amendola, when that was a position of need for them. And, of course, Steven Jackson, who'd been the bell cow for the franchise for some time now, is gone as well. A couple other players, Quentin McKell, but these are older veterans. But they add Jake Long. They add Jared Cook at tight end. And clearly they're planning on varying the offense a little bit, like so many teams are.
Yeah.
Jared Cook views himself as more of a wide receiver than a tight end. The Rams had the best record in the division in what people think is going to be the NFL's best division this year, the NFC West. You got to take these guys seriously.
Absolutely. I mean, they should have beaten the 49ers in that tie game, that 24-all game. And Amendola was huge for him, not only that game, but when he was healthy last season. I think Jared Cook is his replacement. I think he's a slot receiver, different kind of player. He's going to stretch the seam more, but you know, they want to be more vertical. They want to find out if Sam Bradford can drive the ball down the field and have those big plays and stuff. And they had those young wide receivers last year. And remember, they've got two first-round draft picks, too. That's something that they're going to parlay into some good football players, too. So you have the Longs factor. You're probably going to add one more offensive line that could maybe even trade one of those picks down to somebody looking for a quarterback in round one. There's a lot to like about this team. It's all on Sam Bradford's shoulders now to prove, you know, obviously Steven Jackson's gone. That's going to be a huge loss at some point. But Bradford, this is his testing ground right now.
It is interesting, guys, and you look at the NFC West, which is so loaded. It's gotten a little quieter now after Seattle and San Francisco made such huge noise in the first week of free agency. And yet, I think we touched on this last week. I want to go back to it one more time. The Seattle Seahawks, they've clearly made some good moves. I question the Percy Harvin trade. I question that big time. But the price that they paid for Cliff Averill and Michael Bennett, that's like stealing. I mean, they really did a nice job there. But they let Jason Jones get away to Detroit. And a lot of people believe at defensive tackle, he was the key to that run defense this last year. They're not as stout at inside linebacker as they are in other areas. And you have to wonder if that isn't a subtraction that's going to cost them.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to find out. Obviously, Jones was instrumental, you know, not only as a run stuffer, but they love his versatility to slide inside and outside and generate some pass rush. And, you know, people were kind of questioning the linebacker position going into last season. Of course, Bobby Wagner emerged and was such a revelation for them. So, you know, I don't see a lot of holes, but I do think that Jason Jones is a bit of an underrated piece, and we'll see how much they miss him. But I just have to go back to Cliff Averill and Michael Bennett. When I saw those deals going, I believe they happened one after the other 24 hours apart, it made you kind of wonder if the rest of the league had sort of thought, gosh, I wonder if I could have gotten in for this bargain rate, because they got some pretty good football players at some pretty great prices.
You know, let's just put this in context, folks. Cliff Averill played last year under the franchise tag for defensive ends, which was just under $13 million.
Right.
He signs with Seattle in the ballpark of $13 million for 2 years. Again, something is wacky in free agency. We're going to talk a lot more about it. A couple more big signings this week. Greg Jennings is a Minnesota Vikings, and he'll play the Packers twice. We'll talk about that in just a moment. Pro Football Weekly on the radio rolls on. Hub Arkish, Eric Edholm, and Arthur Arkish talking free agency with you, the big signings and big moves of the week. And Eric, few were bigger than the move the Minnesota Vikings were able to make to kick the week off. Greg Jennings, it was long rumored. He is no longer in green and gold. He is now in purple. And, this seems to be a trend in the NFC North. A couple other guys have made this move. People of note. It worked out pretty well for Brett Favre, at least for one season. You wonder how it works for Greg Jennings.
Yeah, and Jennings obviously went to his buddy Favre and said, that move you made, you were happy with that, right? You were glad you went up there. And Favre said, yeah, absolutely. So there was a little gamesmanship going on between the former Packers and now current and previous Vikings. So it's going to be interesting. And, you know, you wonder if maybe they'll dip into the NFC North, maybe go after Urlacher again. They did visit with him before. They have a need at linebacker. But they're another team, that we mentioned that has two first-round picks. So I think signing Jennings, even though they don't have a ton at wide receiver, doesn't force them to take a wideout in round one. They can be patient. They can let the draft come to them. If they see a player they like in another position, maybe a pass rusher to get that D-line a little younger, you know, maybe somebody on the offensive side of the ball at another position, they can go that direction too. So I like their flexibility in the draft. Rick Spielman's done a good job of sort of dealing with all these things. They got a little competition at quarterback too. You and I both like Matt Castle, at least in terms of a backup, pushing Christian Ponder at the starting position.
You know, Arthur, I always thought that the Chiefs overpaid and overreached badly for Matt Castle. I also have always felt that he's a guy who can probably play in the NFL. And having watched Christian Ponder closely last year, I don't know that he's ready yet, and I'm not so sure that the Castle is there just to be a backup. As a matter of fact, Rick Spielman has said it. And then you look at the Jennings signing. You know, in essence, what you did was you traded Percy Harvin for Greg Jennings, a first-round pick, a third-round pick, and a seventh-round pick, and you saved cap space to boot. And when you put, and by the way, they did, I think it was Jarius Wright high last year,
yep,
who they're still very high on.
Yep.
And, you know, so you add him to Jennings. I think Rick's, in full disclosure, I've known Rick Spielman since he was an area scout, just starting in the business with the Bears. I think Rick Spielman knows what he's doing. Unlike some teams that I've questioned, there seems to be a clear plan here. And Arthur, I like the position they've put themselves in with these moves.
Yeah, as did I. I mean, it's a coup to me. You look at what Percy Harvin got as soon as he moved to Seattle, too. So you could talk about the cap hit that they took by signing Jennings. Sure, he did cost a lot, especially for a guy who's 5 years older than Harvin and has had some soft tissue injuries over the past couple years. But we all know Harvin was a malcontent. They don't know if they could trust him, so they were able to ship him out. And as Eric said, I think this does give them some flexibility, and I think they're heading in the right direction. It seems like a clear plan to me. And as far as, you know, bringing in Matt Castle, it's nice insurance. We've seen what he can do as a backup. He came in, obviously, and made that huge paycheck in Kansas City after what he did in 1 year in New England.
A couple of huge moves late last week in Denver. They sign Wes Welker, and then the owners go to Phoenix, I believe it is, for the meetings,
yep,
and Bob Kraft gets in front of the cameras, and suddenly there's a much bigger controversy than anybody realized. And then the Broncos are forced to release Elvis Dumervil after they had agreed on a new contract. Now, in this case, it was the agent who took it in the shorts. He was fired on Saturday. They are, as we tape, trying to work out a new deal. Now, if I'm Elvis Dumervil, I'm playing the field because we know there's a number of other teams that are, they're interested in him too. He'd already agreed to take a $4 million hit in 2013. But first, let's talk about the Welker thing because, you know, Eric, there are few organizations that are held in higher esteem than the New England Patriots. And I think that if Bob Kraft stood in front of the cameras as I saw him do,
mm-hmm,
and said that Welker took a lesser deal from Denver than what we were offering him, I tend to believe that.
Yeah.
And so now you start to wonder what really went on there because you got to believe Tom Brady's not happy. I mean, he took a short contract so other guys could get paid, and then his best friend on the team gets away. This is a story that's going to have some legs, I would think.
Yeah, and I think my first reaction was like many people's and said, wow, this is really happening, huh? Wes Welker's leaving for this kind of money. Couldn't the Patriots have sort of met in the middle or, you know, ponied up the extra $2 million? But I thought at the time, I said to myself, there's got to be more to this story, and once we've kind of dug around and found this out, and the fact that Robert Kraft, one of the more, look, as far as contract stuff is concerned, never, ever, ever, ever talk about money. We don't know what Belichick makes per year. They've never said publicly what they offer people and such. They talk specifics about what their deals were, what their offers to Welker was. That is a unique case. And so to me, like you said, that proves that they were very adamant that this was more of the agents making, more of Welker's making than it was the Patriots.
And let's be absolutely clear here, folks. There are good agents out there. There's a lot of good agents out there. We love agents. I mean,
yep,
you know, they all buy Pro Football Weekly. They're great sources. They're great to talk to. And there's some very reputable individuals. But when you're hearing quotes and you're getting information, the one that is least likely to be 100% accurate or at least not spun to mean what the agent wants it to mean is when you're hearing from an agent. Now, you know, Arthur, we turn it around, and there doesn't seem to be any debate about what happened in the Elvis Dumervil situation. There was a deadline. It was 4 o'clock Eastern on Friday. Was it Marty Maggott? Maggott was Elvis Dumervil's agent. Apparently, Dumervil accepted the restructured deal, signed it at 3:35, sent it to Maggott, and then the Broncos did not get it until 4:06. They asked the league if they could honor the verbal. The league said no. If it's not in by 4, they had no choice but to cut him. Dumervil cut his agent on Saturday and is now a free agent, and the Broncos are trying to re-sign him.
That's right, and from what I understand, there's actually now a little bit of some other cap issues that could come up if they want to re-sign him. It could be a little bit trickier than just doing a new deal and getting it done. I don't know all the specifics on that. You mentioned that they are pursuing some other guys, both John Abraham and Dwight Freeney. So, you know, my take was that obviously a very fascinating story, not one we see often, but even more so than that, I just thought Denver had been kind of all in throughout free agency. You saw all the moves with Welker and Vasquez and bringing in all these big names guys that are going to help. And then it kind of seemed to end, at least last week, it ended on a bit of a sour note. So we'll see now if it is Dumervil returning, if they are able to bring in Abraham, if it's going to be enough, you know, sort of juice off the other side to you know, help Von Miller and help that defense, you know, keep that pass rush going, or whether some of the earlier moves they made are going to be overshadowed if they can't bring back Dumervil.
Yeah, and here's the insight on the cap problem is that Dumervil signed a $61 million deal with the Broncos in 2010 when Josh McDaniels was there. When they sign these big deals with the big guaranteed money, they spread it out to be cap favorable. But when you cut a player, whatever has been prorated in bonus is accelerated and you have to take it. The Broncos took a $5 million cap hit last Friday when they cut Dumervil.
Yeah.
Now in re-signing him, I think they're probably looking for some relief from the league to see if there's a way they can get some of that back. The league probably is going to say no, and so that's the problem with the cap, is he's costing them $5 million whether he's a Bronco or not. If they re-sign him, they got to find that much more cap space. We've got to take a very quick commercial break here, but the hits keep on coming, folks, to the Baltimore Ravens. Ed Reed is a Houston Texan. We'll talk about that in a moment. Yes, we are, and you wouldn't believe it's the NFL's off-season, would you? There's headlines and stories flying everywhere, big news out of the owners' meetings with some rules changes. We're going to talk about that a little bit down the road. Right now, a couple more big deals to talk about, and Arthur, it starts with a team that you cover on a regular basis, the Houston Texans on your AFC South beat. They've got their locker room leadership. They've got their all-pro safety. They've got their future Hall of Famer as the Ravens take another hit, and Ed Reed is now a Houston Texan.
Yeah, and on the Texan side of it, you know, I like the move. What I don't know for sure is just how much Ed Reed has left in the tank. We're going to find out. He was still pretty productive last year. There's no question he's a playmaker like few others we've seen in the secondary in NFL history. So that's what I love about it. You look at the Texans, and that defense was pretty solid last year, but it did sort of regress down the stretch. And one of the biggest problems was in the secondary, a lack of plays being made. We saw Tom Brady, of course, torch them twice. So, you know, Glover Quinn was a good football player. They lost. I think they do bring in, as you mentioned, some real leadership, some real swagger, and I think it should be a nice addition for that defense.
So let's look at these two stories, Eric. You've got Brian Urlacher and Ed Reed, two Hall of Famers, and I was a little hard on Phil Emery at the top of the show, potentially. I'm not saying he's wrong, but you keep asking what's the plan. Look at what's happened to the Ravens, and yet with Ed Reed, they did what they could to re-sign him. He got a better offer elsewhere. With Urlacher, he's chased out of town, and yet when I look at what's happened to this Ravens team, if it was anybody but Ozzie Newsome, I would say, what the hell's the plan here? I mean, this is the defending world champions who, to me, do not look like a 500 football team at this point.
Right, and most teams, you know, they win a title and they're going to suffer losses. That's sort of the way it goes. I mean, you know, the Giants managed to avoid it last year, but, you know, when you see that, you think, okay, that they're sort of playing with house money or whatever. But honestly, I really think these Ravens, this is their approach. They're not going to overpay for people. They set a value on guys. They realize that would it be great for Ed Reed to finish his career in Baltimore? Absolutely. But are we going to overspend to do so? No, that breaks teams up. You know, that wrecks the franchise, that messes up cap situations. And the Ravens have not had to let guys go to fix their cap. That's something they haven't done recently. Yeah, they paid Joe Flacco. People say, oh, it's too much. Look at Tom Brady's deal. Apples and oranges, in my opinion. This is a young quarterback, ascending quarterback. I just won a title, played the best playoff, the four games that I've seen in recent history. So, you know, they're playing the way they need to play, and they took care of their quarterback, and I think they're going to be fine. With all the undrafted guys, all the seventh-round picks they've got that they turn into good players, they'll be fine, I think.
All right, NFL fans, at the risk of redundancy and a continuing theme, the 2012 world champion Baltimore Ravens leading tackler on defense, Bernard Pollard, is now a Tennessee Titan. Arthur, another one of the teams you covered. This one not as surprising. Pollard comes with some babysitting issues. He's a tough guy in the locker room, good football player. We knew the Ravens weren't bringing him back, and yet it adds to the Tennessee Titans' rather dramatic makeover. Now, they did another move like this. They brought in veteran running back Sean Green, and we're hearing that left their $10 million running back Chris Johnson less than thrilled.
Yeah, and when has he been thrilled? I mean, is anyone else kind of getting tired of hearing Chris Johnson sort of complain, $10 million running back who's really kind of underwhelmed the past 2 years? So, look, for me, you know, Mike Munchak said he has a clear plan for Sean Green. As far as that signing goes, I don't really love it. I'm not a big Sean Green fan, and I think you may have found someone similar in the draft. But they clearly needed someone who could come in and get the tough yards and fall forward. They think he can do that. We'll see, though. Like I said, Chris Johnson isn't normally quiet. When he has something on his mind, he will, you know, he'll speak it freely. Obviously, it didn't take long in this case, so we'll see how that plays out. As far as Bernard Pollard, I mean, if you put him in a very specific role where he can just, you know, come up in the box and injure Patriots, he can get it done. So, no, seriously, though, they also signed George Wilson. They do have some competition now at strong safety. That was the most mismanaged position and arguably the biggest weak link on that defense last year. So I think that move is nice, and as I mentioned, it should promote some competition.
All right, and very quickly, Arthur, Matt Hasselbeck seemed to be the ideal guy, a quarterback who could step in and win for you as a veteran, but who was willing to teach and work with Jake Locker. He's now an Indianapolis Colt. That one surprises me a little bit.
Yeah, it's well, I think that they clearly needed to do something. Drew Stanton's going to have a chance to compete now in Arizona, so they did have a void there, and I think that they did a pretty good job filling it. They gave him quite a bit of money, but that's what Ryan Grigson's been doing to pretty much everyone this offseason, so we'll see. They had the money to spend, and what's interesting to me more than anything is just the big departure from Bill Polian. We saw him sort of roll the dice because Peyton Manning was so durable for 13 years in Indianapolis. He could afford to get away with the Curtis Painters and guys like that, Dan Orlovsky's. We saw Andrew Luck take an absolute beating last year. So to me, what this says is that if something were to happen, if they don't get that offensive line strengthened as much as they should, they got a pretty darn good backup, perhaps one of the best in the league now backing up Luck.
Well, and again, real quickly, from my lead, and I love it for Indianapolis, I'm wondering why Tennessee felt it was time to pull the trigger on that.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. They're putting all their eggs in the Jake Locker basket. I think as much as anything, I think Hasselbeck had about a $7 million cap figure for 2013, clearly too high for a backup quarterback. So there's the reasoning.
Now we got it. All right. Arthur, thank you very much. We're going to cut Arthur loose, but we're going to continue with more NFL talk, some rules changes, a quick look at the draft. It's all still ahead on Pro Football Weekly. Thanks again for listening to Pro Football Weekly. We hope you're enjoying the show. I know we're enjoying bringing it to you. I'm Hub Arkush, Eric Edholm, senior editor from Pro Football Weekly, sitting in this week for our host, Wayne Larrabee. Wayne is calling the NCAA tournament this week and next, but will be back with us in 2 weeks. And Eric, the NFL owners convened earlier this week in Phoenix at a rather posh resort. Where else would we expect to find the NFL owners? And really the big news was some rules changes, some that we expected, one that is highly controversial, and I think they all bear some explanation. The easiest one of all, the tuck rule, the famous tuck rule, is gone, and I'm not sure anybody's going to weep over its demise.
The New England Patriots obviously have a place in their history for that, but the question is, why is it taking so long? Have people just put their heads in the sand on this one? I mean, it's one of these funny rules that it's like, okay, I guess I sort of see the intent of it, but, you know, a 29-1 margin, two abstentions. We've got to mention, you know, who one of the teams were that abstained, but yeah, this one is famous, and obviously everybody knows it, and it's part of NFL lore now, and it's not going to be going forward.
I have to confess, I personally never understood the intent of it. I mean, to be a fumble was a fumble. They were trying to protect the quarterback
right.
A little bit. And in fairness to the New England Patriots, I mean, it was the rule.
It was correct.
Yeah, I mean, the Patriots didn't do anything wrong. Yeah. They benefited from a bad rule. And as you point out, it took them 12 years to get rid of it.
My goodness.
The tuck rule is gone. Now, another rule that is all about player safety, as a matter of fact, these next two are all about player safety. The peel back block has been eliminated. There was some conversation initially that some coaches were concerned about a gray area of which ones would you call and which ones would you not. And so as I understand it, the competition committee cleaned it up and they said anytime an offensive player, any offensive player comes backwards to throw a block, that's a peel back block and it's not going to be allowed anymore.
Right. I mean, it's below the waist, now illegal, in the quote unquote tackle box from tackle to tackle. So, it's a 15-yard penalty. It's a big one, you know, so it's something that I think the referees is another thing they've got on their plate. It's going to be, you know, tough at first to spot these things, but I think, you know, it's probably a rule with good intent, and I think it's going to be a rule that probably helps the game a little bit.
Now, before I lied, I said the next two about safety. I'm going to save the big one for a little longer conversation because this one's pretty easy. What will forever lovingly be known as the Schwartz rule is now gone. So I feel like it's something out of a Mel Brooks movie for some reason. But Jim Schwartz, of course, threw his replay flag, the challenge flag, before a touchdown run was complete on Thanksgiving Day. I was actually doing the sidelines for Dial Global on that game. I was about 10 feet away from him.
Yeah.
I didn't realize what he had done. Nobody realized what he had done. It took 5 minutes for everybody to figure it out. But the rule was that when a coach challenges a play that is going to be replayed automatically, it eliminates the replay and the play stands. The league has now said, obviously, that's stupid. So the new rule is that the coach will be penalized, but the replay will still take place.
Right. And I mean, you know, that question could be raised too. I mean, I understand the purpose of doing it. But it's not improving the game in any way when you penalize the coach necessarily. But, you know, they're going to allow the review to take place when the coach challenges the play. But obviously in the past they didn't. It was just the penalty. So, you know, maybe it's better. Maybe they'll realize that this thing is kind of silly, in my opinion.
Yeah, this one feels to me like the NFL saying, well, we're not going to admit we were wrong. We're still going to penalize them, but we're going to clean it up a little
bit. Yeah, they're famous for doing that, no question.
But now here comes the one that is going to stir conversation for the next couple of years until we figure out its ramifications. Offensive players, not just running backs, offensive players in the open field are no longer allowed to lower their head to create contact or initiate contact with the crown of their helmet. Now, that in and of itself is good. Makes sense. Let's eliminate head-to-head hits. The problem is that one of the basic teachings of a running back is you lower your shoulder, and therefore your head has to come with it. And this is as radical a change. This is more radical than what's been done on defense with the defensive players and the hits above the shoulders. This one creates more gray than any rule I've ever seen.
Right. And how's that Sean Green signing looking now? That's basically what he does. He's a power back. He's got no wiggle in his hips. I mean, you know, so you think about these things, and maybe it did affect a couple of these free agent signings. And you know, well, I think the most outspoken guy currently in the league, not counting guys like Marshall Faulk, who's decried the rule or whatever, but Matt Forte, I thought, had an interesting thing on Twitter, and I will read it verbatim. In order to lower your shoulder, you obviously have to lower your head, which is what you're talking about. It's a way of protecting yourself from a tackler and a way to break tackles. Makes a lot of sense. You can't change the instinctive nature of running backs running the football. I think he hit it right on the head, and I think the referees are going to have a hard time calling this. They're going to have a hard time spotting it and determining, is this a 15-yard penalty and a loss, you know, I mean, an automatic first down? I mean, that's crazy.
Well, and here's the other question, Eric. In the interest of eliminating head injuries, how many more broken ribs, lacerated kidneys, ruptured spleens are we going to have as players do not lower their shoulder?
Yeah.
They're going to leave themselves exposed.
Vulnerable. Yep.
This is a rule that was rushed into in the league's desire to prove that they're trying to do something about traumatic brain injury. And I really believe this one's going to be rediscussed and rethought in the coming years, because it just fundamentally changes the game. And that's not what you want to do. And it doesn't necessarily make it safer. That's going to do it for this segment. We've got a lot more, though. Want to give you a little early look at who the top prospects are in the upcoming draft. It's only 5 weeks away, guys. We got it for you right here on Pro Football Week. All right, guys, I can't say it's my favorite time of the year because they're not playing games. And, of course, there's playoffs and Super Bowl. But at Pro Football Weekly, we long ago became known for covering the NFL college draft like no one else. As a matter of fact, our Pro Football Weekly draft preview book is finally available. It arrives from the printer this coming Monday, March 25th. To get your copy, give us a call toll-free at 1-800-FOOTBALL Monday through Friday between the hours of 9 and 5 Central Time, and we will take care of you. We've been known to create a little controversy. We've also been known to have the most accurate and in-depth scouting reports, heights, weights, 40 times of anybody in the business outside of the 32 teams. And I thought today we would tease a little bit, Eric, with our top 15 players, regardless of position. This will change over the next 4 or 5 weeks, but not that dramatically. And let's go for it. Who are our top three? The guys, and again, you know, team needs come into play here, but if it was just about the best football players, who would be the first three guys off the board?
You notice a theme here. It's offensive lineman. Luke Jokel, the offensive lineman, Texas A&M, safe pick. Everybody seems to have him going number one, depending on if there's a trade or not. Chance Warmack, the Alabama offensive guard, probably won't go number two, but somebody's going to get a great football player there. And then Eric Fisher, there has been some sentiment for the Central Michigan tackle to perhaps be the number one guy on the board. He's right behind those guys at number three.
Well, and I really should have gone top four, because Jonathan Cooper, the offensive guard from North Carolina, is number four. Some people actually like him better than Chance Warmack. He does have the ability to possibly play center as well. And then another theme begins as we go to the next five, if we were at six, I should say, as we round out 5 through 10, you begin to see the strength of the defense and the defensive front in this draft.
Yeah, Sheldon Richardson, the highly athletic defensive tackle out of Missouri, just ahead of Sylvester Williams, defensive tackle out of North Carolina. I think both guys are going to be first-round picks, no question about it, despite some injury and character questions for both. Dee Milliner, the Alabama corner, you know, maybe he's more of a cover two corner, but the top defensive back on our board at number seven. Star Lotulelei, I mean, the Utah defensive tackle, in discussion at least as maybe the best player on the board, had a good workout in his pro day. There are questions about his ejection fraction, the heart condition that he's developed. Medical people want to clear him first, but when it's all said and done, probably a top 10 player. And then you have maybe the two most debated guys in the draft at the same position, outside linebacker in a 3-4, Deion Jordan out of Oregon, and Jarvis Jones out of Georgia. There is the stenosis question with Jones. Might be the better player, whereas Deion Jordan's more of an upside guy. Both guys can rush the passer. Both look outstanding football players.
Yeah, Jones, of course, a kid who was at USC before Georgia.
Yep.
He's had an interesting college career, and yet he is a hell of an athlete, folks. Going to be a very good football player. Going to be drafted very highly. Now, we look at the next five, and this is where it really gets interesting, because at number 11, we've got Tyler Eifert, the tight end from Notre Dame. And this is great based strictly on their grade,
right,
regardless of position.
Best player, yep.
He's not going to get drafted that high, because tight ends don't get drafted that high unless they're better than Tyler Eifert. Question's going to be about his blocking. He clearly fits here as a receiver, and then we go right back to defense again.
Yeah, I mean, I think you look at Eifert, and he's going to be a piece that you can move around and do a lot of things with. But like you said, the theme in this year's draft seems to be front seven on defense, offensive line on the offensive side of the ball. And you look at Sharif Floyd of Florida. He could go even higher than Richardson or Williams. He's somebody that we have ranked number 12, still a good football player. Manti Te'o, you got to mention him. Everything that comes with him should still be a first-round draft pick. And then guys like Eric Reed didn't have as great a senior year as last year at LSU, but still a guy with a lot of upside. And his teammate at LSU, Barkevious Mingo, probably an OLB in a 3-4, a little bit light in the shorts, as they say.
Yeah, I think Barkevious Mingo should be top five just on the name.
Right.
For me, that's good. Manti Te'o is ranked 13th on our board as a football player, folks. We're not going to get in right now to the off-the-field stuff. So who's missing from the top 15? Quarterbacks. Who's missing from our top five quarterbacks? Geno Smith of West Virginia. Remember 2 years ago, we had a rather harsh scouting report on Cam Newton that proved to be absolutely true and correct after we took our fair share of grief for it. We have a different report on Geno Smith, but one that is not all that much more complimentary. On the Pro Football Weekly board, Geno Smith is ranked as the 102nd player in this draft, the 6th best quarterback, and we will see how this plays out come draft day. We've got to take one more commercial break, but the publisher's pen is ahead. Stay right where you are. We're back in just a moment.
And now with the publisher's pen, the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish.
Well, Eric, thank you very much. And at the risk of sounding like a broken record, I've got to do it. It's been the theme of this show. It is the theme of free agency this year, and it's something I've been talking about for 2 years now. It is the collective bargaining agreement which the owners and players are currently working under. And this year, for the first time, we are seeing the true effects of that agreement on free agency, on player compensation, on the almost complete elimination of a middle class in the National Football League. What is happening now is younger players with great physical attributes are being tremendously overpaid, injury risks are being gambled on, and quality 6-7-8 year players are not being paid, apparently out of concern for nothing else than the salary cap, and that there might be a younger player who can fill the bill for less money. The way this cap works and the way this CBA works, there just is no more middle class. You're either a high-paid superstar or you're being asked to work for near the minimum in the NFL these days with some incentives. For a lot of guys, that might be reasonable, but when you see the Urlachers, Abrahams, Freenies, and Dansbys of the world out there being offered the same deals, you got to say, hey, something must be wrong here. That'll do it for this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly. Our thanks to Randy Meyer, best producer and engineer in the world. Of course, Eric Edholm, thank you so much for sitting in for Wayne Larrabee. Wayne will be back in 2 weeks. And Syndication Networks, our home studio and syndicator. Most of all, though, thanks to all of you for listening. We do appreciate it. We look forward to visiting with you again next week. Same time, same station on Pro Football Weekly.